Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
She's a seasoned actor who's appeared in films like Superman Returns, Danny Deck Chair, The Nugget, and on TV series from All Saints to Home and Away, and most recently The Circuit. But if you're a parent, you are very likely to know her from this program, Play School.
What do you think our names are? I wonder if you know.
My name is Karen!
Hello, 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 hello.
Her name is Karen Pang. She's been playing with teddy bears and singing nursery rhymes to her adoring national audience for 10 years now, and she's with us right now. Karen, hello.
Hello.
Should we be doing some sort of, I don't know, play thing or blowing up balloons or, I don't know.
Well, you can, Sheridan,
thank
but
you.
I'll watch.
Do you get tired of that, actually? You're the play school girl, so Karen's here. Let's break out into song.
Well, actually, sometimes, to be honest, yes.
Yeah, I bet.
It does. I do love my job very much. It's one of the most rewarding, and I've had some of the most special experiences doing this job, and I still count it, you know, right on top, even above some of the films or things I've done. But there are times when it does get a little tiring, and you are identified in that very specific kind of framework.
I bet every church you go to, we'll talk about your faith in a minute, but I bet every church you go to, they say, great, we've got ourselves a children's worker.
That's right. Sometimes they believe that I most probably know everything about playgroups and children's church, and I'm like going, I'm still learning and I still got a lot to go.
Well, how did you get onto this interesting path? Mm-hmm. Where did it all begin?
Well, it began. In actual fact, my sister was the one who first wanted to act. It wasn't me. And I was a classical ballet dancer. I was working very hard to attain that, you know, that solo career and everything. So I left school at about year 10 to be a full-time ballet dancer. But I went back to school and realized that no, that wasn't my thing, and actually really was actually burnt out. And didn't know what I was doing. And I remember in about year 11 or so, year 10, I did this role in a Shakespearean play called A Twelfth Night, and I played the Feste, the court jester kind of role, and I just had a ball. The experience was just so memorable. It was emblazoned on my memory. But not only that, I was also doing speech and drama classes. My mum put me in there to do an extracurricular activity and just to make sure you can speak well. But the teacher really instilled in myself like a love for text and drama, and I just never forgot that. But I think the thing was that I never realized that you could actually pursue the thing that you enjoy doing.
Right, right.
So that wasn't until later when I was in university floundering around going, oh my gosh, I'm not sure my direction, that I actually left university, took time off, and thought, this is something I can pursue.
Yeah.
And then it went from there.
If you're involved in anything that's kind of arty or the arts related, will you ever be able to earn a crust from this?
I think that was really heavily upon my mind. I thought it was a selfish thing to do because it was like there's no guarantees that you're going to earn anything. But also it was a cultural thing too. The general Chinese community, they were all, you know, going economics and IT and like all those kind of careers. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm really maybe doing something ridiculous here.
A lot of my Asian friends are actually all in those areas that you're talking about.
Sorry.
But it's true, isn't it? You know, there can be a general trend for certain groups.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the way things go. So you head off to NIDA.
I did.
What was that experience like? Was that kind of, okay, I've found my spot, now I just need to earn a living from this?
Yeah, I mean, initially when I went in there, I was just absolutely, I was amazed that I was going to get an opportunity like this. I felt like it had just dropped out of the sky because it felt like it was so easy. That actually how I got in there was just...
Because it's not easy to get into, really.
I mean, people keep telling me that.
But it was easy for you.
But it was easy for me, and I felt that that was just purely... It was a blessing that had been given to me and said, go this path, walk it, because things like that don't come like that so easily.
This is Open House right across the nation. Karen Pang is with us, the actor, who you will well know from Play School if you are a parent. Let's talk about Play School because that's what you're better known for, even though you've done other roles. And I want to talk about those as well. Where did the door to Play School open now, 10 years ago?
Oh, well, that was just another door that was literally open to me. A lot of oil on the hinges, like just swung open. Seriously, I walked out of NIDA and basically I was auditioned straight away in my final year at NIDA, and that was my first job I walked into. I was very, very, very fortunate. Mm. So it was
Well, don't worry about can I earn a living from this, can I? Oh, I'm going to be the struggling, hungry artist.
That's right. So that question was pretty much crossed out, you know.
How is it made? I mean, do you go in and kind of, you know, record a whole bunch of episodes all at once? Or
yeah, we do. Well, it's actually not a full-time job. We do about maybe 50 or so episodes a year. So they're sort of spread out through the year. So maybe we will record and rehearse 6 or 8 episodes, and then we have about a month off, and then we'll do another few, and then maybe another 2 months off. And so it's all spread out through the year. It's pretty much due to studio availability. Mm. But and they'll work around us while we do other work. We rehearse 2 episodes a day, and then we'll record 2 episodes a day. Mm. And they're all scripted, but there are moments where we will instill our own little, you know, whether it be made from a mistake.
Yeah, yeah. Give us an example.
Oh, gee, I have made so many mistakes. I remember once I had like this, it was like a puzzle. It was like a 4-block puzzle, and it was a wombat. And for the life of me, I could not put this wombat together. It was made of 4 pieces only.
And the kids are watching, you know, at home going, Karen, look, you just put it there.
Yeah, exactly. That's the leg and that's the other leg. But somehow I just got the head, you know, at the other side and the legs were on top. And so I just could not do it. And so I had to just keep on, you know, doing it. And I think they thought it was just very funny and just actually, you know, just having a good laugh while, you know, we're just going to let her keep going until she gets it.
Right.
So they did. And so my other presenter, he was just absolutely, he was in stitches. So we were both in stitches really by the end of it, yeah.
So, I mean, some of those things could be edited out afterwards, but there must be an appropriate place to leave that kind of stuff in to show to the kids, well, it's not all perfect.
Yeah,
life isn't
that's
all
right.
perfect.
And the fact it shows us, yeah, that it's not all perfect. And they love that. They love it when we're just a bit of a goose.
Right.
I think kids can just tell straight away when, you know, things are just a bit too... They can see straight through us. Yeah. So, and they also love to see our personalities. And we are all very distinct, and that's why we're all there.
And do they write your kind of personality aspects into the script, or do you just get to throw those in along the way?
A lot of the times when you do read the scripts, you'll find that a lot of our aspects of our personality are in the scripts. Mm-hmm. For example, I'm a more energetic and I'm very sort of very just usually very high energy, and I love to just jump around a lot. But sometimes there's another presenter like Justine who is just a little more quieter, and so she brings a different energy to it. And so you will see that sometimes the scripts will reflect that. Like, you know, I'll do some, you know, crazier songs, and so you kind of get a bit of both. And then we have our own personalities that we instill ourselves into it too, yeah.
Yes. Now, what would parents love to know that only you can tell them about play school?
Gee, I don't know. What would parents want to know? I don't know, actually.
Does Reese Mouldin pull funny faces at you off air or something? Or
Well, he doesn't have to pull any faces because he's just purely funny as himself anyway. Uh-huh. So, no, I don't think there's anything that is really incriminating. That's just me saying it because I'm on air.
And the ABC heavies all around
us.
No, they're watching.
No.
Karen Pang is with us on Open House, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast. So, well known for Play School. But then there's been these other films and other things that you've actually done, TV programs you've been involved in all since, and Home and Away and Superman Returns and Danny Deckchair and things like that. Is it favourite experience out of any one of those?
I don't know the word, like the favourite, because every single one I've learned something from, something that I've gained and something that I have actually grown from, and I've moved on to the next job and I've like been able to use that. So that's been like my favourite moments. Where
learning new skills.
New skills, and where something, when you're in the job itself, something clicks. Because there are a lot of things, I think a friend of mine once said as an actor, and I totally agree with her, is that you are actually confronted with yourself too. That certain things do rise up that is actually personally true of yourself. For example, I remember doing just an audition recently. It really asked me to be a very strong kind of woman. And I went into it and I did this particular scene. And I found myself slaying towards being a bit of a weaker, just not very confident, and structuring in a way that I would be comfortable with, safe, a very safe choice. Mm. And the person who auditioned me said, I didn't believe that. was an actor fluffing it. And I was so glad that this person actually said that to me, because I realized that I had to really take a look at myself and go ahead. And he said, I want you to just go with it. Don't think about it and let whatever comes to you come. And I realized that at that point that not only was I overcompensating, but I wasn't working with what I had, which was just me. Having to just come out of the audition and realize, wow, that doesn't just apply to the audition, but it applies to me generally in my life.
Right.
Was this like this moment where I think, oh gosh,
yeah,
I got to take a look at that.
Yeah. It's very exposing to be an actor, isn't it? I mean, you know, you're out in front of everybody. It might be on a stage, might be for a small crowd, it might be on TV or in the films, you know. You're really laying yourself bare, and that performance will be recorded and it'll be there for posterity forever after.
Yep.
Must be interesting as an actor to deal with those kinds of emotions as to how far will I go in front of this camera?
I don't think that sometimes actors even think about how far they will go. They just will go. I think they are more worried about what the consequences are afterwards. I think that's why it's such a challenging industry, is because it is about what kind of response will they receive. And will it be one that is well-received or not well-received?
In terms of critics and...
Because what they are critiquing is them.
Right? Yes. So how do you personally deal with criticism like that?
That sways from, at times, really well to sometimes I don't receive it well at all. So that has been one of the great challenges of my life, because I think that's, for me, an ongoing struggle is to how do I... I'm not there to please people. That's what I would intellectually say. But actually, you know, and to actually know that this is what I do and this is what I am able to do, and that's the bottom line.
Yes.
Everything else around it, well, that's people's personal and subjective opinion.
The head can say it and the heart doesn't feel it yet.
And this is the point where I have to draw on far greater than myself, because that, for me, I am very weak on that count.
Well, let's talk about that then. Your Christian faith. You are a committed Christian. Where was the genesis of that? How did that begin for you?
Oh, boy. That genesis has been a continual work in progress. I believe that God has been so kind to me. I at one point turned away from him, but he never left me. Year 7 was the first point I actually had this moment where this kind of light just went, oh, something amazing has happened.
Had you grown up in the church?
Yeah, I grew up in a church. Like, my father and mother went to a church where a lot of Chinese people congregated. And more so because they knew that there were a lot of other people who were from Hong Kong. And so it was just a safety and a security too. So whether they were Christians or not, I don't know. But I was there knowing that, you know, went there with my mum and dad. But in year 7, I realized that that there's something very important did happen, that Jesus is the very crux of that. And I found that was like just a little moment that just was, a blossom started to happen. But God the judge, the father who was distant, was a far greater presence in my life than that moment of what Jesus was.
The distant judging God.
God.
Yeah.
And I found it very hard to draw close to God, because I just constantly felt that I was not worthy to be loved or to be given that kind of response from God. And so I led a very two-faced kind of life. So on the weekends, I was into everything from, like, I led a very rebellious teenage years, right towards, especially from about year 10 or year 11 onwards, I was just all over the shop. So, I was, drinking a lot and just doing, kind of going out. And then on Sundays, I'd go to church thinking, oh my gosh, I better go back to church and see if I can just rectify this. But it was
purge
just constant.
The sins, so to speak.
Yeah, so to say. But I think it was in 1998 that I was at this conference that Philip Jensen was speaking at, and it was called on the Cross of Christ.
The Sydney Anglican Archbishop.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And he was talking about the Cross of Christ and just the impact of what Jesus did in terms of how much he suffered, how great the cost was the first time that I actually, it was just amazing. I just could not turn my heart or my eyes away from the fact. It was just a physical, emotional, and it was a spiritual moment that I think God really laid upon me and convicted me of. But though I'd say that it's supposed to get better from there, it I wouldn't say it didn't.
Okay.
It actually, not that it got worse, but it actually did become quite a challenge because then he began his work. Like, there was a lot of work to do. I had a lot of healing to do. In my childhood, there was trauma that I had gone through before, and there was a lot of healing and cleaning out to do, and actually trying to reconcile what that meant between myself and him, and how did he fit into all of that. And it has been, you know, a constant process that he has, you know, followed me and never left me, even though many times I've pushed him away and said, look, you should really, you know, leave me because I'm not worth it. But, yeah.
The distant judging God came close and was the warm, loving father who embraced you. You know, it's interesting, those of us who have been Christians for a while, and we've seen God's love and we've felt it touch us and change us, and sometimes we can have this kind of idea, come to Jesus Christ and your whole life will be changed, and it's true. But for a good deal of us, there will be some trauma to go through as he actually starts to renew us and change us and transform us and get rid of all that stuff or deal with the past.
Yeah, that's right.
It can be actually quite traumatic.
Yeah, and it was. It was very traumatic. I think, though, but the essential part was, I think, was when I said to him, because as time went by, I realized all the things that were rising up that I had kept quite laid, but, you know, repressed and contained in a very dark place in my life because I did not want to remember a lot of things. I got to a point where I realized I can't live like this anymore. And I know that he's the only one that can bring me through this. So my prayer was, at one point, was that I had to pray, do as you will, whatever it takes, you have to do what you will. And I will go wherever you will have me go. And that's when the bottom dropped out. And so, but apart from that 98 moment, was the next then. Went into the next level.
Do as you will.
Yeah. To really understand what it meant to just say, I will go.
It's never one moment, is it? It's a number of moments in a relationship with God where we've these significant turning points. Karen Pang is with us. This is Open House Across the Nation, well known for her work on Play School, but also been in films like Superman Returns and Danny Deckchair and All Saints and TV programs like that. Something else that you are also quite open about, which I think also connects with your faith as well, because we're talking about how God kind of helps us get through these moments in life that can also be quite traumatic, is the fact that you wrestle with bipolar disorder, depression.
Yep.
Why are you so open to talk about that?
Oh, gee, for many reasons. I think...
Because some people are like, well, here she's the bright, shiny, you were saying before, you're the high-energy person on Play School, and yet you're very happy to explore this in our conversation.
Well, a lot of people, most probably, the first thing they ever said to me when, if I ever explain that I do have this, is they go, I would never have thought that. And you go, but why? My life is not a perfect one. I mean, I have days and I have days. And I don't get through this in a perfect kind of way. And I am reminded that I have limits. And those limits then draw me closer to God, because then I have to run to the place where I know that is only consistent, solid, and unchanging, and that is God our Father and our King.
We should probably define also bipolar disorder as well, in the sense that you can have those manic, kind of high energy periods, and then the depths, the real lows that can come sometimes within a day?
Yeah, well, not so much in a day. It's within periods of time. So some of them can last a lot longer, but it is usually, you know, more an extended periods of time. They can go for, you know, a couple of weeks to maybe, you know, a couple of months, and then it can switch over and then it can, you know, but usually it's not so much within a day. So these things last for quite a while.
And when did this first hit you?
Well, earlier in my life, I think I explained before, was that as I was working through a lot of the trauma in my life, was that I was initially, you know, they thought that it was depression, and I was in a severe depression, had to be hospitalized because of the depression. But at that point, I don't think that it was understood exactly, you know, where I was. And I had a lot more things to work out in terms of the counselling and the trauma. It was last year was the first time they actually realised that I had bipolar, because I went into an actually extended manic phase. And so that was when I first had to realise that, wow, now this is what I have, and this will now actually be something that's going to go right through to the end of my days. Now, how do I manage that? Mm. I mean, I am also married, and it's not just a one, you know, one man show. And how do I learn to do so with my husband and not put my head down and independently go, I got to work this out. Just leave me be. So it's, yeah, it was
it's
last
never
year.
Simple, isn't it? You do anything that any of us have always affects those around us, yeah. And vice versa.
Yeah, vice versa. So it has been sort of a very interesting journey, I mean. But I also have found that in the general wider community, mental illness is still, I mean, it's much better than it was, but it is still at times a taboo topic, you know? People are not quite sure what to say, or they're not sure what to do. But generally among my friends, they're great. But at the same time, people, if they see you well, then they'll go, oh, then you must be fine, because it exists on the inside, while I guess it's not externally something that is seeable, and they cannot actually, identify. So
my mother has a number of chronic illnesses, not actually a mental illness, but a number of chronic illnesses, but she's a very bright person. And so people say, oh, you look so fine. What's the problem?
Yeah.
you just don't know what life is like inside this body.
Yeah.
How bad has it gotten in the past? I mean, has it ever stopped you from working?
Yes, it has, actually. I actually did have to be hospitalised for 2 months scheduled, because it was quite
severe.
So, and those were the moments where I think when you are that out of control and the fear is so great, you have nothing to hold on to, because it's just taken its own course.
And what is the worst aspect of it? Is it the manic phase, or is it really the depression phase?
They always used to say that most probably they say, oh, the depressive phase is the worst. But I would say the manic phase is just as bad. I mean, yes, you feel fantastic and you feel absolutely amazing. You could do a million things, and I did. I mean, I draw and I paint, and I did some amazing artwork. But the thing is, there are moments where you have this slight clarity, and you think, I can't control this, and I need to find some way to get back somehow, but I can't get back to reality, as we would, as what we would term it. And that's that pull right in the center of you, and that tear is just, that's the painful part, because you feel the pain of knowing that something's not quite right, but I can't get this right. But then you also, moments you register the faces of, like, my husband and the people who love you, and you go, something isn't going on, but you can't quite register, it seems to be distant.
So you don't realize that you're actually in that phase?
No, and know that they're, they're in some kind of pain, but you're not quite sure what's happening. So this kind of very out of sync kind of feeling is just, I felt like I was underwater, basically.
Yeah.
And the coming out of it was a difficult part.
So today, is this medication, evening that out a bit?
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's a great thing, I think, about the medication at this point. I would say it's not like, you wouldn't go, medication is the solution, but it definitely is a part of the management.
Mm.
It has been a holistic thing, exercise, eating well, and just having certain things set in place, the strategies, and learning more strategies as I go along, because it's a continual learning process.
And then I guess that's the times when you really cling on to your faith.
Yeah, absolutely.
Somebody bigger than you can reach in and help.
I have grown in that a great deal. You're pretty helpless. Neither anybody around you can come into that internal place, and you have to actually stop, and you're forced to actually stop, and you actually have to, because you have nowhere to run, you've got nowhere to hide, to be able to say, God is great. And I think the Psalms actually epitomizes the entire, this kind of
people, the writers there are right in the depths, aren't
they?
I'm in a pit.
Yeah, in the pit.
Pull me out.
And that's the thing, they were saying, at the same time, though, they were saying, yeah, I mean, this is happening to me, and this is just is greater than I can take. I am in the pit. But at the same time, in exactly the same passage will be, God, you are faithful. God, you are good. I will remember your good deeds, and I will remember your faithful love. That, essentially, at that time, and then this time, is still the thing that I am learning and continuing to hold on to.
Yeah. Well, Karen, you've done play school, you've done movies, you've done TV series. What's next for you to do? You were mentioning art that you do, in drawing and painting as well. What have you yet to do that you would like to do with your creative artistic talents?
Oh, gee. I've had soaring ideas from, I love cooking, and so I've, thought about
Cooking program.
Yeah, cooking programs to, opening cafes to, continuing to, definitely draw and paint, but I don't know. It's so many things that I can think of.
All creative things.
Yeah, usually all creative things.
So you could have a wonderful cafe with your artwork on the thing. You could have a little place there for kids. You could bring it all together somehow.
Yes, it's right.
What does your husband do?
He is a counsellor, actually.
Is he?
Yes.
Wow, that'd be interesting then with the dynamics that we've been talking about over the last while.
Yes, it is. Yes, I don't want to, end up to be his, forever client or something like that.
Because he's thinking, okay, I can use these skills. Hang on, this is my wife.
He's amazing. I think God has really put us together as a complement to each other because at times that has been what we are. He has been the one who has pointed me back towards Jesus and said, you got to focus on the one light and one hope that there is, not just this life, but beyond this life, that there is a guarantee and it doesn't end here. And then other times, he has the one who's has found that it's been very hard to continue walking. And at times, we have just helped each other and I've said, no, I can do this. So you walk with me on this. It's not impossible.
Well, Karen, I've so enjoyed our conversation. Thanks for dropping by.
No worries, thank you.
Great. Karen Pang there from Play School, but also from numerous TV programs, TV series, films, and the rest.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.